Hi, and welcome to the McGregor Dementia Support Ministry podcast, a podcast providing relevant resources to those currently walking the dementia journey with their loved ones. Today's podcast is a session that was recorded from our Alzheimer's and Dementia Seminar held here at McGregor Baptist Church on February the 18th, 2024. Today's podcast is titled Communication in Dementia Care by Cynthia Perthes.
First, I want to say thank you to Kim Mitchell. She is an absolute amazing person to be able to put all this together and have us here today. I'm just amazed at how many people that have come. I saw it last year. We've got so many more this year. I'm going to get ahead of the game here. I'm looking forward to being here next year. So I want to tell you why I am here. I was raised in a Southern Baptist church in Texas with a very conservative family, and my father was the head of the household, and my father was who we adored and honored all day, every day, and if we didn't, we were reminded of why we should, because there was the Ten Commandments, and that's what we did. But my father developed Alzheimer's, and at the time that he developed it in 2006, my mother called and said, your dad has this disease, it's called Alzheimer's. I said, yeah, okay, whatever. And she called my sister, she said, okay, whatever. I call my sister, I go, what are we supposed to do? And she said, huh, mom will take care of it. And mom took care of it until my mom died with Parkinson's in 2010. And then we had 6 more years with my father. He was in Texas, I was in New York City. My father had Alzheimer's, my grandmother had old-timers, and my great-grandmother had senility. All the same thing we know now. But none of us knew what to do except to, as we heard earlier, talk louder or pay attention to them more, get their attention. But that wasn't what was solving the problems. My father called me for about a 4-year period every day about 20 times. And he asked me 3 things. How much money do I have? Where's my bank statement? When are you coming to see me? And when he would call me, I would say, you have plenty of money. I'm mailing your bank statement tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow. Now, I was in New York City and my father was in Texas. I answered his phone call 1 time a day, and I didn't answer it the other 19 times because the message was always the same. How much money do I have? Where's my bank statement? When are you coming to see me? At one point, we moved my father into a community, and I went to see him, and my father, we played cornhole for 2 hours. We watched Food Network. We had a great time together. I got in the car and my phone rang. And who do you think it was? It was my daddy. And what do you think he asked me? How much money do I have? Where's the bank statement? Where are you coming to see me? Now, my gut as a child of his and someone who loved him and was really sad about him having this disease, my gut was to say, my gosh, I was just there. I just spent 2 hours with you. But I could not do that for him because that was a reminder that he didn't have those memories. And I had at that point some knowledge about this to make sure that I didn't say those words. So I want to tell you what we do is we help people find a location for their loved one, whether it's at home, and we try to help make that figure that out, or whether it is a professional community that works with memory care. We also consult around dementia. I have a team here and I have a team in New York, but we work all over the country, and that's what we do. And my mother is very proud of this, even though she doesn't know that I have this job, because she always told me, you think you're the authority on everything. And I'm the authority on senior care. So I can tell my mom that, you know, I was right all along. So just so you remember. So what we do is we do placement, we do consulting, we do family coaching. My very favorite phone call that I get is when someone calls me and they say, my father, my husband, my mother, my wife, my friend, my neighbor has dementia or doesn't have dementia. They will never, ever move into a community. And I say, bring it on, okay? Because we're going to help you figure out if that's the right move and if you want how to get them to move there. So we want to talk today about how to communicate with people with dementia. Now, I heard a neurologist speak last week that he doesn't know this, but I've now used his phrase in a number of presentations I've done in the past week. He says that when he tells his client, his patient, that their spouse has dementia, and he says, there's one thing that you need to know. You, the one without dementia, will never win another argument. Don't go there, don't try it. You will never win another argument. Those days are past. Your time now is to say yes. Your time now is to say, I'll see you tomorrow. Your time now is to say you have plenty of money. That's what the time is once you get to that point. So today we're going to talk about the changes that occur to communication. We heard a lot of it in our keynote address. I was saying, stop, that's my slide. So you're going to hear it again, because I also believe that I need to tell you what I'm going to tell you. I need to tell you, and then I need to tell you what I told you, because it takes three times, and that's for people who don't have dementia. So we're going to learn about these changes. We're going to learn ways to maintain and enhance connections, because that's what's important, is this connections. And we're also going to understand a phrase I use countless times a day with my clients. We're going to learn about compassionate storytelling and what that really means. So throughout the disease, there's this early stage, the middle stage, and the late stage. Again, we heard this earlier today. He looked at my presentation. He used my slides. So we're not going to really dig into that too much, but we're going to review it a little bit. So in those early stages, they still have thoughts or feelings, people who have this disease. And that's a time when they have some agency to be able to talk about what they would like when the time comes, because they know they can have a discussion about future care. That's a time to ask them, if this happens, what would you like for me to do for you? If that happens, what would you like for me to help you with? Some of that can be as simple as, if you forget your words, do you want me to fill them in for you, or do you want me to be patient and wait? Very simple topic. It's not a topic about life or death. It's a topic about when we're having a conversation, do you want me to fill it in for you, or do you want to answer those words? It's a topic, it's discussions about, if we're in a crowd of people, when do you want me to take you out of that crowd of people? Do you want to stay with the crowd of people, or do you want me to take you out earlier? Do you want me to watch cues that you might do? What would you like for us to do? When it comes later in the game, what would you like for us to do for you? Don't make any promises here, because we don't know what's going to happen. But ask those questions and have those conversations. However, even in the early stages, they can maybe misunderstand what you're talking about. And a lot of things we're going to talk about here today can also work for you if you're dealing with somebody who doesn't have dementia. These are some basic communication skills. There's a little bit of difference with dementia, but they could help talking to your kids. They could help talking to your neighbor. When we get to the middle stages, the words become more basic, and the sentences are more basic. It's more simple things. At this point, you also want to be asking things, not what do you want to wear today? What do you want to eat today? Not that we want to infantilize this disease, but it's very similar to when you have children. And if you go in and say, what do you want to wear? They're going to stand in the closet and they're going to try to pull all these different things together, and it's not what you wanted them to wear. So it's the same thing when you have dementia. You're going to the closet and you say, what do you want to wear? I don't know. It all looks the same to me. I just want to put on what I had on yesterday, and that I wore the same the day before, and the day before, and the day before. I want to wear that same thing. So as opposed to saying, what do you want to do? What do you want to wear? You want to say, would you like to wear this, or would you like to wear that? Give small, simple choices in these middle stages. As opposed to saying, what would you like to eat for lunch today? You might want to say, we're having ham sandwiches today for lunch. Does that work for you? Or, I'm going in to make breakfast. I thought we could have eggs, or we could have pancakes. Would you like eggs, or would you like pancakes? Something as simple as that, by using basic words and sentences. And in the late stages, as we saw again earlier, use senses to connect. The discussion of having a discussion around ideas and things that have happened. I work with a lot of mid to late stage clients, and I go visit with them. And I have one that every single solitary week, I walk in the door and I say, "Hey, John, how are you doing?" He says, "Great, good to see you. My dad is coming this afternoon to pick me up from the dorm." Now, John is 85, and he says he's coming to pick me up, and I called my mother to tell her, and I said, "That sounds great, John. Are you thinking about going to Ireland when your dad comes to pick you up?" "I love Ireland," and he'll say, and he tells me about Ireland. And I use the who, what, when, where, and why, and I say, "Really? What are you going to do in Ireland? Why are you going to Ireland? Who's in Ireland? What do you like about Ireland?" One of my final discussions that I had with my father was watching Food Network's Anthony Bourdain. And we're watching a time when he goes to Madagascar. And I say to my dad, "Have you been to Madagascar?" And he goes, "Oh, I loved Madagascar." "Never been." And I said, "Well, what did you do in Madagascar?" And he's watching TV, right? Food Network. "I ate a lot of food." "Really, what did you eat?" "Crickets with chocolate." "How were those crickets with chocolate?" "Well, they were kind of crunchy." And I said, "Well, why did you go?" And he said, "I just didn't have anything to do, so I thought I'd go to Madagascar." We had a discussion for a long time about Madagascar, where my father had never been. It's one of the most pleasant memories I have of my father in his later stages of dementia, was the fact that we could share and enjoy. Now, I called my sister, and I said, "I saw Dad today. What'd you guys do?" And I said, "We talked about his trip to Madagascar." And she said, "He's never been to Madagascar." And I said, "I know." She said, "Well, did you tell him?" And I said, "No, I didn't tell him." Why tell him? Why not have an hour-long discussion about Madagascar? I learned a lot from my dad about that place, okay? So you want to think about ways that you can connect and understand and be with them. I have a client that is, she gets very upset about things. And we were having a trouble trying to get her to not be upset. And I went to her neurologist and I said, "You know, we don't want to do a lot of medication here. We just want to try to do some other things." And we brainstormed about what this woman would like. And sometimes in memory care with women, they'll give them a baby doll, and that comforts them. That wasn't working with Wilma. Wilma would throw the baby doll. So the neurologist said, "Well, help me out. Tell me about her background." So she's from Kentucky. She is born and raised Southern Baptist. He said, "Gospel music. Put on gospel music for her and see if that helps her with the baby." So sure enough, we put on gospel music. She sat with the baby for hours with the baby. Whenever I would go see her when she would fall or she'd be in an emergency room, I would take my phone and I would put it on gospel music and I would lay it on the bed beside her in the emergency room, and it calmed her. But we had to think of those things. She liked gospel music. This guy over here may not like it, so it doesn't work for everybody. So you have to find the thing that works for your person. So let's dig into the early stage again. Remember, there's this finding problems, word finding problems. What's the word? You're not gonna say, "What's the word?" You know it, you know it, think about it. You're going to either try to help them, to give them cues, but remember, you might've had this discussion. They wanna try to find it, and that's fine to let them find it. And if they don't find it and the subject changes, it's okay that they didn't find it. We see in these early stages that people are less social. They withdraw from conversations because they can't keep up. We also see in this early stage, I see it with women, they decide they're not playing bridge anymore. And the reason they're not playing bridge is because everybody's cheating. And so they're not playing bridge. And we get this phone call, "My mom won't play bridge anymore. She's played bridge since she was in high school, but now everybody's cheating." They're not cheating, but she's withdrawn from that conversation because she can't keep up. And so it's okay at that point to say, "That must really be bad that they're cheating. Why don't we find something else to do?" The discussion is not, "Oh, mom, they're not cheating. Come on, you've known these people forever. How do you cheat at bridge?" The discussion is to kind of agree with them. It's hard to make decisions. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Do you want to wear the red or do you want to wear the blue? And then the speed of speech slows down, so they take longer to respond. you need to know that it's going to take 2 to 3 times as long to have a conversation, to walk down the street, to make a meal, as it did before dementia. You probably haven't figured it out. I talk fast. I lived in New York. I do things fast. I would go to the first client that I wanted to take him to the doctor. I think I'm going to drive up in his driveway, honk the horn. He's going to jump in the car. We're going to go to the doctor. I'm going to have him back in an hour. It took us 4 hours. He wasn't ready. I realized that my day with people with dementia, I need to just really take a long time. I need to have the whole day to go to the doctor. It makes me less anxious around my client. It will make you less anxious around your person that you love that has this disease. And it will make your life so much easier if you just pick one thing to do. Not we're going to go to we're going to go to the doctor, then we're going to go to Target, then I need to get the tires done, and then we're going to go buy dinner. You just need to pick one thing so that you can have the time to focus on the person that you love that has this disease. Try to keep them engaged in things that they love. Include them in the conversations. Include them. Have a discussion about Ireland. Have a discussion about Madagascar. Just include them in these conversations. Keep your sentences simple. Slow down. You cannot multitask with a person with dementia. You must focus on them because you need to be mindful and present with them and leave plenty of time for these conversations and transitions. During this time, we've seen these pictures of the brain. Those pictures of the brain are so empowering. I've seen pictures of my clients' brains. It makes me cry sometimes to see those pictures and have that person that is my client at the time sitting there beside me as I look at these pictures with the doctor. They're empowering pictures, but it is so important to see them because you know that it's not them. You want to avoid making assumptions and accusations. You want to talk directly to them. You don't want to talk about them while they're there. You want to make sure you're laughing with them, and you want to be honest and be where they are. We heard the sentences said, do you remember? I say that the word remember is the cuss word, okay? Don't use remember. Don't say, do you remember? Don't say, oh, remember when? Don't do those things because they don't remember. And that's very frustrating. So that's a communication tool that you should keep in mind. Let's look a little bit deeper into this middle stage. There's even more problems with word finding, and they begin to invent words to describe things. Instead of a watch, they might say, well, I need to find my hand clock. If you think about it, it's a clock on your hand. So they're going to use some different words, or they might give you words that say, I want that stuff in this thing. What they're trying to tell you is pour the water in the glass, but they can't come up with those words. That's okay. Don't try to force them to come up. That's not a hand clock. You know what it is. What is it? Don't do that because they can't. They lose their train of thought, so they become quieter. Because they're speaking less. And so they're not pouting, they're not angry, they just don't have the words to talk. Behaviors begin to play a larger role. We've heard some other discussions around behaviors. Behaviors are lashing out. Part of the reason that people lash out is they don't have the verbal ability to tell you what is wrong. They can't tell you what hurts. They can't tell you what they're thinking. So we see a lot of times that if someone is in a bed and a caregiver goes in and wants to turn them, remove them, they will hit them. I think of it in a couple of ways. There may be a pain, but I had a client one day who said, you know, they said he's hit the caregiver. And I said, well, what happened? Well, the caregiver went in to check on him. Well, what time was that? It was 2 a.m. And I said, well, what did they do? Well, they came in, and it's what we always do. They come in, and they said, Mr. Walsh, are you okay? And I said, well, I would hit somebody if they came into my home at 2 a.m. You're in his space. Maybe there's a different way to do that. Maybe there's an announcement that you should make or jingling of the keys or something that allows this person to wake up, something that allows this person to know that you're around. You don't ever want to approach anybody from behind that has dementia, or really from the side. Dementia can cause a loss of peripheral vision. So when somebody comes up beside them and they can't see it, it's frightening. So you want to make sure that you've come around and you've approached someone but to talk to them with dementia from the front. You want to make sure that you approach them at their eye level. If they're sitting in a chair, you need to get down on your knees so that you are eye level with that person. You want to call them by name. You want to ask them if it's okay if you touch them. Is it okay if I put my hand on your knee? You want to warn them that that's what you're going to do before you talk to them. That will keep these behaviors from being there. Something else is if your loved one is in a community, is living in a memory care community, and you go to see them, don't make a big deal about leaving, okay? Don't make this, okay, I'm going to go now, it's going to be okay, I'm going to be back tomorrow. What you're going to say is, I'm going to go down the hall to the restroom, I'll be right back. I'm going to go and check over here with the nurse about something, I'll be right back. Or you can even say, here's some artwork, let me go get some other things to work on with you. They will not remember that you left. They will not remember that you're gone. But when you make a big deal about leaving, it upsets them. We have clients that will get the phone call that says, every time the son leaves, she runs to the door and tries to get out the door because they're in communities where they're secure so that they can't wander away. And so we will go to the son and say, you know what, when you leave, don't make a big deal. Oh, well, I want her to know that I love her. I want her to know that I'm there for her. I said, she knows, she can feel it. And when we make that, we make that behavior change with the non-dementia side of the family, the person with dementia is much calmer where they are. So there's little things that are little tips and tricks that you want to think about. Again, always come from the front. Don't argue. If they say to you, you're not my husband, you are my son, just say, uh-huh. Because if you argue, it just causes a lot of problems. Always use a kind tone. Talk slowly, and again, use eye contact. Another thing that my mother used to tell me, besides the fact that I thought I was the authority on everything, was she told me that she could read my facial expressions, and I may be saying, yes, ma'am, to her, but my face was saying that I was saying, you're really a stupid person. And so I didn't believe her. And then I went on to corporate America, and I would get a review that would say, we could see when you roll your eyes in a meeting. And I was like, oh, I don't roll my eyes. I went to classes to learn how to get my face to not say what I was thinking. I also learned how to do other things, which I got that one I got caught on. I would just look down at my paper. If I was in a meeting and I didn't agree with somebody, I would just look down at my paper. And then I got we've seen you look down at your paper a lot. Does that mean you don't agree? So we can't win on this one, okay? But you want to use a kind expression because we know that communication is not just about the words that come out of our mouth. Communication is about facial, it's about body. So you need to work on your expression so that they know that you mean what you say to them. You want to, again, be in their reality, connect in their reality. Look for what they're thinking. You can see their expressions as well and their emotions. So you don't have to they don't have to always be able to say the words. Be patient. Do things once again. We're here in this middle stage. You're going to do things one at a time, one action, one request. Limit distractions. I had a client with pretty severe dementia, and he was at home, and he had four children, and the oldest daughter was really loud, and she had three dogs, and she would come into town from another state, she would swoop in, she'd have the dog, she was like, we need to clean this up, we need to do this, and the dogs would be barking, and I would come over to see them, and I would have to tell her, I'm going to take your dad outside, we're going to sit by the pool and talk for a while. Well, here, take the dogs. And I was like, I'm not taking the dogs, okay? Because we needed to be able to have a conversation. And I had to go to her and say, I need you to keep the dogs away. And I went to the younger sister and said, could we deal with you, with Dad? Because the older sister was a real problem. And it had to do with the distractions. You want to use visual clues, so you can say, you know, why don't we go and eat? Have you brushed your teeth? What time do you think it is? Have you put on your clothes? Those are ways to communicate. You can write things down for them, like put things on stickies and put notes, but they're not going to remember. But if it makes you feel better, then do it. Don't quiz them. Well, what do you think you should do? Well, where do you want to go? Well, why do you do that? Offer the answer in the question. I bet you're thirsty. Here's some water. Let's talk about a way to help people who don't want to bathe. So anybody with the dementia person and they're not bathing, right? If you're not raising your hand, then you're fibbing to us. Because they don't want to bathe, and we don't know why that is. We don't know if it's an embarrassment over having someone else see them. We don't know if they're too cold or too warm. We don't know if the water's too cold or too warm. Some people will say the water hurts, and it may be that the water actually hurts their skin. But instead of every day fighting the bathing fight, it's more like, hey, you know what? Let's go to something over at McGregor. And before we go, why don't we just all get cleaned up? We're not going to use the word, go take a shower. We're not going to use the word, you have to take a bath. We're not going to use that. We're going to say, let's go clean up. You're going to kind of sneak that in to make that happen, as opposed to having the battle about bathing. And make sure that you're positive as much as you can be about everything. Accept their reality. Validate their experience. Like I told the bridge story. The other story we hear a lot is somebody's stealing my clothes. I have brand new clothes. Someone is stealing my clothes. And instead of saying, nobody's stealing your clothes, they wouldn't want that dress. Instead of saying, nobody's stealing your clothes, who's been in here? You have to say to them, that must be really terrible. I go back to the 20 plus years of therapy I've had, and what I always learned from therapy, that the words were, how does that make you feel? And what do you think you should do? You use those same words with someone who has dementia. When they tell you that someone stole their purse, how did that make you feel? Oh no, should we call the police? Can you tell me what it looks like? And you go through the motions with this. Make sure that you redirect them while they're waiting on the police if you've said, I'm gonna file a police report. Don't you know, stay on that topic. So let's look at the late stages. Simple words, they can still respond to common words, and they can generally understand complete sentences, but not necessarily. Their facial expressions might give clues to how they're feeling, but sometimes they don't. We've heard stories already today about someone who just kind of grunted or groaned. Touching is really important. The use of lotion, maybe a lavender lotion, just sitting and rubbing a lavender lotion on someone's hands, that is a form of a loving communication. Bringing a popsicle, and each of you having a popsicle, you don't have to really be having a conversation to communicate with someone with dementia. Different fabrics or textures, a bag that has a piece of velvet, a piece of burlap, a piece of silk or satin that they can just feel, and you can pull each one out and maybe have a story. This came from a dress that I wore to the prom. I wore a pink dress to the prom and it had these flowers on it. Did you go to the prom? Just those types of discussions that maybe you don't get any answers, but you're having discussions with them. Stuffed animals, fidget blankets can help. Videos of animals, children. I have a client who had traveled to 35 countries, and she was very proud of that, and she told me every time I came to see her. And I began to bring some pictures for her to see, and I would say, look at this picture of this country. This is Afghanistan. And she would say, I've been to Afghanistan. Maybe she had, maybe she hadn't. Maybe it was Madagascar. It doesn't matter. We talk about, really, how was that trip? What happened on that trip? What did you eat? Did you enjoy it? photos, sitting in nature and just thinking about the sounds and the feeling and the birds and the greenery, painting some bright shiny things they love to see. That's a way of communicating. Music, reading a simple children's book, reading something that maybe was read to you. Maybe this is a book your mother read to you. I'm hoping that my son comes back around and reads me I Love You Forever, I Love You For Always, my very favorite book. And I've given it to my granddaughter. And so when my time comes, I'm counting on him coming back and reading that book to me. Because those are books that are easy to remember. They're long-term memories. Use gentle, easy tones of voice. And remember that if your loved one with dementia, if their first language is not English, they're going back to their first language. You need to be prepared for that. Not as much in Florida. I do a lot of work in New York City, and we have clients who will call and say, my mother has dementia, and I say, what is her first language? And we try to find a place where she can go, where there's someone there who can speak that first language. Or we get translators to put signs, like for a door and for bathroom, in that first language, because that's the language they're going to go back to. And musical instruments, music is what soothes the soul, especially when you're going back to the memories you have of I Love Hymns. So, smell, scented lotion, and engagement. So gather a small bag of items to smell, as we heard earlier today, and as I know, that smell, it goes straight to the memory, goes straight to the brain. Different foods. Now, you have to be careful when foods, because you have to make sure that they're able to swallow. So make sure that you're paying attention to that. So let's talk a little bit about compassionate storytelling. Has anybody ever heard that phrase, compassionate storytelling? Have you heard the phrase compassionate fibbing? Or as my father used to call it, a white lie. What we do with compassionate storytelling is we tell a story that may not be factually exactly true. And an example of that would be when I have a client and they will say, where is my husband? I'm looking for my husband. And their husband died 20 years ago. If I tell them that their husband is dead, they begin to mourn. So what I tell them is, he's at the office. I know enough about my client to know he's at the office, or he's on a road trip, or he's out harvesting the crops, because that is something that is calming and is helpful. And telling them over and over and over, your husband is dead, your husband is dead, your husband is dead, your husband is dead, is not kind or compassionate. And it doesn't help anyone serve any purpose to tell them that actual factual truth. If their children have died, it's not helpful, because they will begin to cry, oh my gosh, my son died, because they don't remember that their son died. Something else that we will tell them, I have a client, again, this one is in New York. Every day he would get up and he would put on his suit, and they would say, where are you going? He said, I'm going to the office. Now, he lived in a community, and they built on a wall about this big a replica of a bus stop. It had a bench, had a little overhang, and had a subway system map, or bus map, from New York City. And he would put on his suit, he'd pick up his briefcase, and they would walk him over, and they would sit down, and they'd say, why don't you wait here for the bus, and here's the map, if you want to look and figure out how you're going to get there. And he would sit down and wait for the bus. And about 10 minutes later, 15 minutes later, he would get up and he would go have breakfast, and he would leave his briefcase sitting there. They'd go get it, put it in his room, and the next day, he would wake up, put on his suit, pick up the briefcase. Where are you going? I'm going to the office. Come sit by the bus stop. As opposed to saying, you don't have to work anymore, you're retired. He doesn't remember that part of it. And so it's just much more compassionate to tell him a story about something that makes him happy. We have a client that we express this to the daughter, this would be a good idea, tell your mother a story about moving. because she said, if I tell her she's moving, she's not going to want to move. I said, okay, let's tell her a story about something that's happening at her home, why she can't stay there. When I went to see her mother that afternoon, surprisingly, the mother remembered this story, or maybe she made it up herself. She said, I'm here. I just want you to know why I'm here. I'm here because they had to tent my home because we had cockroaches. And I said, well, that just must be awful. She said, I'm so glad to be here. I mean, have you seen a cockroach? I'm like, great. That's okay for her to think that. When my father moved, my son went and picked him up and took him to lunch. My father thought he was being kidnapped, okay? He went to the waiter and he goes, I don't know who these people are, but he's here for lunch. My son then took him around. I graduated from Baylor. My dad took him to Baylor to look at the Bears because my dad had always liked the Bears at Baylor. And then he took him to the place where he was gonna live. About a month later, I went and he said, here we are, we're gonna have dinner here. And he sat down, they had dinner. And my son said, going to the bathroom, but be right back. Got up, left. My dad was there. A month later, I go to see my dad, and I said, hey, how are you doing? He goes, great. Come with me. I need to give you a tour. This is the hotel that your mother and I bought. So we had plenty of room for all of our friends. My mother had been dead for 5 years, and I said to him, you don't have a hotel. No, I didn't say that. I said, aren't you smart? What a great place. Show me more. Tell me more about the hotel that you bought. So that was a way to have him be comfortable in where he was. So that's what we call compassionate storytelling. Oh, I got ahead of my slides here. Therapeutic fibbing, that's something else that we call it. You don't want them to repeat their grief. You want them to be comfortable and happy. So we have about 4 minutes. I'm watching the clock. And this is usually an hour-long presentation, just so you know. So I have a lot more stories, is probably what's missing here. Can we ask questions now since we have time, or would you not? Okay. Does anybody have a question about communication? Look, this is hard stuff. Yes. Okay, so the question is, when someone is sundowning and they're repeating over and over and over again, the word is distraction. And that's the hardest part for me, is coming up with something else. And that something else is usually, I've got a candy bar over here. You know, I see it in some places, in some communities, they have a box of chocolate kisses, of Hershey's kisses or something. And they'll say, oh my gosh, here's a Hershey kiss, would you like this? Because it's something that keeps their mouth busy. And also something that if you can keep their hands busy. That distraction keeps them from ruminating on, I gotta get out, I gotta get out, I gotta get out, is to just distract and tell another story. And sometimes you have to find somebody else to do it because maybe what you're doing is not working. And so when it's just the two of you at home, that's hard to find somebody else. But maybe you say, oh, you know what, can you help me sort the laundry? Can you help me do that? There are some communities that keep a laundry basket of socks. They keep it in a closet, and when they've got something that's going on, they'll bring out that laundry basket of socks and say, can you help me sort the socks? And then, don't let them see you, they undo the socks and put them back in the laundry basket. But it's something that distracts them. Give them something for their hands, give them something for their mouth, and that will distract them. I think we have time for one more question. Yes. So I have, I tell stories about little children because there is some similarities there. Again, not saying to infantilize it, okay? But I have, my partner has a grandson, and we took him to the Touch-A-Truck at the Church of Christ last week. And I'd never heard of Touch-A-Truck, and he's about 18, 19 months old. And I would say to him, because David went off with the other grandchild because he's got these two grandsons. And I would say, let's go look at the fire truck. Do you want to go look at the fire truck? And he didn't say anything. No, no. And I would say, okay. And I would go to the fire truck, okay? And he would climb on the fire truck. So because that was all I don't know if he doesn't know how to say yes yet, but he said no all day for 2 hours in the hot sun at Touch-A-Truck. He's saying no, but he's then he's eating it and he's doing it. And so I ignored him. Okay, so it's the same kind of thing, but you have made these French fries because you know he likes them and you want them out there and you want him to enjoy the French fries. So for me, as a partner, if I made the French fries and they said no, I would go, I made these French fries. You like them. I just would just walk away and see if they eat them. Just like I walked away from Liam and he climbed on the fire truck. It's the same kind of thing. I had a client yesterday who asked me, my mother wants to go to the grocery store. She lives with her son, and every time we go, she buys sausage and chicken every single time, and she never cooks it. And I said, what's it cost you to have sausage and chicken? Whatever. Either let her buy it, or when she gets home, you cook it, or that's what's going to happen. My father used to ask my sister for batteries. He would say, I need batteries. And she would say, and I said, what does it cost? Take a bunch of batteries. So it's about being patient with them. Okay, they're bringing the hook. And I also know that lunch is right behind me, so I know that's a good reason. So thank you very much for your attention, and I'm outside if you have questions.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please subscribe to this channel if you've not already done so, and leave a review if you found this content helpful.